Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she is here in the first hour of the program, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And this is your opportunity to call in and ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Could be grass. Could be trees and shrubs, could be flowering plants, could be vegetable materials, could be houseplants, any and all of that. You're certainly welcome if you have questions. And it may be, as I usually say, it may be that there's something, some lingering issue from last growing season that you still haven't quite dealt with that you have questions about. Perhaps you are thinking about what you want to plant this year. And how to take care of the things that you already have. Those sorts of questions, that's exactly what we're here for. And I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us around Illinois and Indiana. And that is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you have questions, you can call us. Glad to have you here once again.
Good morning.
And one of the things I was thinking about asking you about, and I don't know if this is far too general and it's really plant specific, but the question is this. Around our house in the last few years, we planted a number of perennials of different kinds, and most everything has done really well. And now we're getting to the point where things have been maybe 2-3 years on the ground. They're growing well, and they're developed into fairly good-sized, healthy plants. And the fact that there are some that are so big that I'm starting to think, now, is this something that I can divide? And I guess that's my question. How do you know what you can and what you can't divide? Is there any easy rule, or do you have to research each plant and ask that question for this particular thing now? What is there anything like that you can do with it?
Yeah, I think there's a few, maybe there are a few general things. Like anything that forms a clump, as in the clump just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I'm thinking of things like bee balm, or if you think of the way mint grows or anything, they sort of send out these rhizomes. Piece of cake, you know, you can divide those, do whatever you want with those. And most of those are pretty darn tough. Now, traditionally, we'd probably like to do it more like in April. We're getting a little bit later here, but you could still sort of divide things. I just make sure I water them. We may get into, hopefully not get into dry spell, but we can. Or we might do it in September. So usually April, September are the best time. So anything that forms a clump, not a problem. Divide those. Anything that obviously forms like separate crowns, and I'm thinking of things like hosta, where it actually, if you look at it, or daylilies, if you look at them very closely, you can see there's sort of these separate crowns, and then they keep adding crowns and stuff as the plant grows. Those are pretty easy to divide. You can really tell that those can be divided. I think the hard part is when you start getting into plants that look like they obviously have just one trunk coming up or one stem coming up, then that gets to be a little bit trickier sometimes. I think of things like bleeding hearts, the old-fashioned bleeding hearts. Mm-hmm. If you look and see how they grow. The plant itself kind of keeps getting bigger, but they have kind of a taproot-looking thing, a little bit harder to divide. And some of those types of plants don't like to be divided. So there may be a few of those. If you start looking at those one single crown, those would be the ones I'd start to research and really think, I don't know if I can do this or not.
Okay. Well, I think I got it. And that's,
pretty
that
well
seems like it's pretty easy.
At, yeah.
There was one thing that I was I had been delegated to ask you about and then promptly forgot exactly what it was. I'm kind of thinking that it's an anemone.
Anemone?
A Japanese anemone. And
sure.
it has a fairly good-sized kind of heart-shaped leaf. This one in particular is variegated, and it sends up sprays of really little flowers. And there's this on this particular plant, they're sky blue. It's
pretty.
A really pretty plant, and we have it planted in a place where it's a shady spot, and it's done very well, and it's gotten really big. And we were thinking the other day, well, can we divide that, because it's really almost getting too big for the place that it is, and then just take it and take part of it and find another spot for it.
If I remember how those go, it's more like a clump.
It is a clump of leaves.
It's almost like coral bells
indeed.
And actually, those can be divided. You can still divide those kinds of plants. And actually, some of the plants like coral bells actually appreciate being divided once in a while, because they kind of get this lump to them kind of thing, the technical term, and they actually appreciate being that. So, and that one, you know, you may or may not want to go ahead and do that now. You may not want to wait till September or so, or you certainly could do it now. Probably the only plant we say don't divide them in the spring would be peonies. You really should divide those and move those in September.
So either probably it's, if you're going to do that, it's good when they're just getting going, or when they're on the way to sort of being done and they're leaning towards
Right. But not too terribly late. And part of that is just weather. We really don't want them to go through the really hot, dry period when we've just divided them.
All right. We have several callers. In fact, the lines are full. So let's get to it. And we'll start with someone in Champaign and line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes. Hello. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a problem with, I got some azaleas, some large flowered azaleas, and they had a terrible powdery mildew problem last year on the leaves. They've lost all that. They've come out this spring. They're flowering. They look really healthy. But what should I do to prevent that powdery mildew?
There's certainly one of the things with any of those types of diseases, if there's any way that you can improve air circulation, is going to help. And that may or may not work well for you. I don't know if this happens to be around a lot of trees, or you might just sort of think about that. Sometimes we can't do a whole lot about that, but that's certainly something to think about when it comes to fungal diseases. There are some sprays that you can use for powdery mildew. With any of the funguses, for the most part, you really need to do it ahead of time when you think it's going to start happening or when it's supposed to start happening. So you'd want to do it fairly. We're a little early now, but you certainly should start thinking about a fungicide spray. There actually is one called Remedy, which is it's actually bicarbonate of soda, which is a fairly safe product, and it can be fairly effective for powdery mildew.
Okay. I appreciate it.
All right. Very good.
Thanks.
Let's go to Paxton. We have someone calling from cell phone, line number four. Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, just fine.
Okay. I actually had two quick questions. I've got a line of bushes, and had them trimmed down, and they're doing quite well. But the problem I have is they're infested with deadly nightshade. And I did get a spray that, you know, kills weeds and grasses. And I've used them around the edges, but I'm concerned about if I spray, you know, the deadly nightshade's coming up right through the core. And I'm thinking, well, if I spray too close to those bushes, I'm going to do some damage there. So I was wondering, outside of getting down and, you know, I have a feeling I'm fighting a losing battle outside of just getting down and trying to pull them out. Is there anything, technique that I can use?
Yeah, unfortunately, those guys, as you've figured out, one plant will produce thousands of seeds. And so if it goes to seed once, then you've got a battle for probably a number of years, because those seedlings will just keep starting over and over again. So your first thing, don't let it go to flower. Don't let it go to seed, so you at least can stop that. So if you can't, you know, completely win the battle, at least make sure that you remove any flowers or seeds or anything like that. So that's one thing. And you're right. Probably at this point, your best bet is going to have to actually pull them out. Or if there's some way you can use, if you can cover up the shrub with plastic or something and actually paint on something like one of the non-selective herbicides, something like Roundup Cleanup. There's several of them out there, and you actually just paint on, and that way it'll actually kill out the root.
So I, as far as the spray, should I be concerned about damaging the shrub itself?
You sure? You absolutely should be concerned about that.
Oh, okay. Because I should not use that spray then.
Well, as I said, what you can do is that if you can cover the shrub, you know, if it's coming out inside the plant, if you can cover the shrub so that no spray can contact the shrub itself, and you can just do, all you need to do is do this long enough until the spray dries. So you take, you know, plastic, something, cover it up, and then take the little weed out, and then go ahead and just paint it on with the herbicide. Just paint it right on, or just delicately spray it. You don't have to drench the thing. And you just want to wet the leaves a little bit, and then wait until it dries completely, and then you can remove the plastic.
Okay. And then the other quick question I had, I bought Impatience, and I guess I was a little impatient. And,
I was waiting for that. I was waiting for that. Yeah.
Isn't there a drum roll or something?
Anyway, they were still in their tray, and I watered them, and I watered them with a fertilizer. And some of them, I planted them all in the ground, but some of them look like they're pretty burnt. And I'm just wondering, over time, will they come back, or have I damage them to the extent where I've killed them?
It kind of depends. A lot of what I saw after that hard freeze we had was that a lot of things just got burnt, is really what it looked like, burnt on the outside. But the main stems were still quite alive. So I think you're just going to have to individually look at them. But if the main stem is fairly alive, and, you know, there's still, you know, some halfway decent size to the plant, they'll come out of that. It's going to take them a little bit longer, and so depending on how impatient you are, whether you want to just sort of, you know, get new ones or whether you want to, but most of those, from what I saw, they got nipped on the outside edge, but it didn't kill off the whole plant.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the call. Next, we'll go to line number three, and this is someone in Aurora. Hello.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to hear your voice again.
Great.
I have a Merry Christmas hosta.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very prolific like its sisters are.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do, or what can I put on it? What does a hosta like in the ground that it will do better?
As in fertilizer type stuff? Or?
Yeah, or any other thing.
Yeah. I think one of the things with hosta is that if you can give them some supplemental watering in July and August or when it's really dry, I think you'll see some added growth just by that. They'll do much better if they're not going through those really dry spells. And you could certainly use if you wanted to go the fertilizer route now, I'd probably go with something like a 5-10-10 or
5-10-10.
Uh-huh, or compost or something with some nitrogen, but not a ton of nitrogen, and that'll help to encourage them. And
how about Miracle-Gro?
And that's fine if you want to go that route. That is normally one that you'd actually add to water.
Yeah.
And it's a faster-acting type of fertilizer. It doesn't last quite as long, but it'll act much faster for the plant.
You know, I never knew to ask that question, mm-hmm. and I often wondered what the difference was.
Yeah. If you want a quick reaction, like you have, say you have azaleas or rhododendrons or blueberries or something that are showing a very yellow color, and you know you need some iron, they're getting some iron deficiency, and so you want a quick reaction, that's one we like to use as water-soluble type fertilizers because it's much faster reacting for the plant. For other things where you just want to do some general purpose type fertilizer, the granular or compost or something is just fine.
Oh, that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Then the other thing I wanted to ask, that lilac bush that's supposed to bloom all year round, is that a good situation?
You know, I have seen that one. I have yet to see it in a garden. So I think it's one of those. I see no reason why it couldn't happen. The jury's out on it as far as how it's going to be in the garden, to be honest with you. But I think it's kind of an exciting thing to see. So I have a feeling what's happening is that it's able to put on its flower buds more than one time, obviously.
Yeah,
it's
because not just the weather would be different than spring weather. August
right.
Weather
so that's not right. It's going to be very interesting. It must be putting on flower buds on new wood, which is different. Lilacs normally would put on flowers on old wood from the year before. This one is probably growing so fast that it's actually producing flower buds on new wood as well. So it's probably just a genetic manipulation where they've found a lilac somewhere in the world that bloomed on new wood and crossed them.
And I'm ordering one from Jackson and Perkins. They're sending me the catalog. Oh. I'll try it.
Let me know how you like it.
Yes. And then my last question is, I asked about the, I heard the answer about the Monarda. And,
mm-hmm.
well, I guess I asked everything and let somebody else have a
day. Okay. Have a good day.
Thanks for the call. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580 in this first hour, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us monthly on a Tuesday. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape, lawn and garden care. So if you have a question, having a problem, not quite sure how to solve it, or maybe you're also looking for a suggestion on a plant, you are welcome to call 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. We do also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. And next, we will talk with someone in Champaign, and that's line number two. Hello.
Hello. Oh,
yes.
Just calling again. I was going to ask a few questions about, for example, the chemical sprays and this sort of thing. I appreciate you mentioned fungicide remedy, which
mm-hmm.
is like a safe organic product.
Mm-hmm.
I was also wondering, for example, for dandelions, my condominium association, they seem to really be bothered by the dandelions. They don't bother me, but and so they come in and I think they spray with some kind, maybe it's 2,4-D, and
yeah,
they
probably.
Really spray a lot of it all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I get allergic to all those chemicals,
mm-hmm.
and it really bothers me, and I thought maybe if I could come up with a good alternative for them, they would use something different. I thought
mm-hmm.
maybe I'd ask for suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Boy, right off I really don't know of what would be considered an organic way of controlling dandelions other than digging them up and getting them out that way. I think maybe you could come with part of this, and maybe you can come to some compromise as in see if they can just do spot sprays. Because there's really no reason to do the whole lawn if the dandelions are just in one spot. You know, just spray the dandelions themselves or just spray those spots where the dandelions are and just leave, don't spray the whole lawn. So maybe you can discuss that kind of thing with them, and certainly that would reduce the amount of herbicide that they're using.
Gotcha. Well, my other two, I was curious. For example, like the Roundup product, is that essentially 2,4-D? Is that what's in there?
No, they're actually different herbicides altogether. Yeah,
oh, they are? So.
Right. 2,4-D is one of those that selects out broadleaf type of weeds, and that's why we like using it in lawns, or some people like to use them in lawns, because it doesn't hurt the grass, but it will kill off broadleaf type weeds like dandelions and other things, whereas Roundup, and those are non-selective, so they don't know the difference between a good weed, a bad weed, a grass, whatever. They pretty much kill off anything that's green that they're sprayed on. So it's a big difference between the two on how you're going to use them.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So maybe there's some compromise there. You could see if they can dig out some of them and then maybe herbicide some of the bigger ones. So good luck.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good. And one other question I thought about. I was looking at a website just yesterday, as a matter of fact, in Canada, where they have these organizations. They don't use any sort of chemicals at all, but they, you know,
right.
have a whole program. Like they'll put down gluten, corn meal at the beginning of the season for fertilizer. And
right.
anyway, it just seemed like there was some really good companies in Canada. But do you know of anybody in the U.S. that has that kind of sort of holistic approach without using chemicals in general for lawn? And they were talking about lawn care, too, and they
right.
had a really good program.
Right. And actually, corn gluten is something that we use. It's actually for pre-emergent control, so it's better for things like crabgrass, things that come up from seed. So that's one of the problems with dandelions are perennials, so they come back every year. The original plant comes back every year, plus they produce lots of seeds. So it gets a little bit harder to deal with them because you're dealing with the original plant.
Right.
I would just check with, you know, maybe do a web search out there. Gardens Alive, I'm not necessarily endorsing them, but Gardens Alive catalog, you can go online and see the types of products that they have. They deal more with organic type products. It really is one of those things where people just have to decide what their priorities are and go from
right.
there. Yeah.
It's really important to me because I get allergic to it all.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you.
I don't have a problem with it, so they don't mind it. But yeah.
Right. So I certainly think there's some compromise out there, room for compromise for sure.
Well, very good. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, good
All
luck.
All right, thank you for the call. We'll continue. And the next person in line would be in Urbana, in line number one. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I thought I knew every dastardly weed there was out there.
You have a new one?
I do. Well, it's new to me. It looks like sort of a cross between, the leaf looks like a cross between maybe like a sweet potato leaf and a morning glory. You know, sort of a heart-shaped leaf.
Hmm.
And it's a twiny, tenderly sort of thing. And it has, what I've been able to dig up, the roots are kind of thick, white, almost an opalescent white. Thick.
Hmm.
The size of my little finger.
And have you ever seen it flower or do anything like that?
No, I hope I don't.
Good point.
I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm thinking it's some sort of creeping Jenny, sort of wild morning glory thing. But these roots, and I've just been digging it out. But I'm wondering if I'm going to have to round up. I don't remember it in this area before.
Right.
But the roots are so large underground, I can't believe that it's not been there and I've missed it.
Mm-hmm. How big are the leaves?
Well, I don't know that they're just. I'm trying to get them as they come out. They don't look. Let's see. What's that? Maybe 2 inches. In length, maybe, but they may not be anywhere near their full size.
Yeah.
They're a shiny, darkish green, but a real tendrilly, vining sort of plant.
Mm-hmm. Hey, do you know what bindweed is? Bindweed? It kind of sounds like bindweed.
I was hoping it wasn't.
Well, it kind of sounds like bindweed, and it certainly has roots like that. Bindweed does, with these kind of white, fleshy roots. And you're right to be scared, because it's a tough weed to get rid of.
Yeah, I had it in the gardens at Meadowbrook, but I don't remember the weeds, the roots being that big.
Yeah, I would. The other thing, are you here in Champaign, Urbana, or... Okay. You can certainly bring it into our extension office, and we'll be glad to help you identify it.
Okay.
And we're at 801 North Country Fair Drive there in Champaign, and you can bring it down. And actually, anybody out within the state, Illinois, Indiana, just go to your local extension office, and pretty much all of us will do weed identification. And then from there, give you some ideas on how you might control them. Makes a big difference when whether it's an annual, perennial, those kinds of things.
Let us assume the worst and that it is bindweed.
Yeah.
Roundup isn't particularly effective on that, is it?
Well, it can be. It is one of those things that with bindweed, actually, with a lot of those hard-to-kill weeds, it's going to take a certain amount of vigilance. I mean, you're really going to have to, you know, either pull up what you can. And most of the time, you can pull up parts of it. But
yeah.
then those, have you found out, the roots break off.
I know, and they keep coming back.
Right, so they come off back from there. But I would pull out what you can, and then the new stuff that comes up, that might be the part that you then decide to go ahead and use a non-selective herbicide like Roundup, and then just paint them on or spray it on depending on how well you can get to without touching other plants, and then go from there. So I have a feeling it's going to be a combination of the two things, trying to dig up what you can. And but I know, but better off now than waiting a few years, and then it's like everywhere. So.
I may come over the house. I mean, that's the sort of feeling I have
yeah.
with bindweed. It would just grab your ankles and
right,
drag
right.
it off into the
bushes. And it often will take, you know, a couple of years before you really find you can get rid of it, if it's gotten established.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Well, we know what you're going to be doing this summer.
I think I'm going out to do that right now. But I have one more question. I'm just getting ready to move a couple of lavender plants who haven't been particularly happy, and
mm-hmm.
I'm out with some pretty heavy clay soil.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, and what I've been reading over the winter is that something to loosen up and lighten up
mm-hmm.
the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Sand, what kind of sand, if I put in sand, what would you recommend if not sand?
Well, I would go ahead and use sand
mm-hmm.
and just use a ton of it,
okay.
as in almost more sand than soil, or
right.
I should say more sand than soil.
Right.
And
okay.
so it's very well drained. They have to have that, or they're just not going to be happy.
Right.
Full sun's going to be better,
yep.
good air circulation, all those kinds of things. I would not mulch them with wood chips. Don't get wood chips near them. If you want to mulch, I'd mulch with sand. So good air circulation, and then
right.
just that dryness. And really, you can just use any of the construction grade sands. You don't have to have anything. I'd probably go with construction grade. Some of the bigger stuff. You don't want that real fine stuff.
Oh, okay. So that's the play sand that they're going to have in bags outside the grocery store is not going to do it. I need to find.
That's probably. You know, I'm not sure. You know, it's been a long time since I looked at play sand.
Yeah,
but,
I know that there's some difference. So it's actually a grain size difference. That's a granular. Size difference at the play sand is maybe a finer sand and the other is sort of
see that's what I'm wondering. And you could certainly, it might even be a little bit cheaper to go with construction grade sand.
Yeah,
if you buy
that stuff that's made for to go in the sandbox,
mm-hmm.
you probably would end up paying more. That's
right.
I guess the few times that I've used that is underneath stepping stones or bricks when I was trying to tamp
right,
down
right,
a solid
right.
foundation so they
right.
didn't sink into the ground. So I haven't but I think you probably end up paying, you know, $5 for 10 pounds or something
that.
And,
and
depending on how much you need it, it probably would be cheaper if you bought the stuff that was for making concrete or whatever you do with it in construction.
Right. And I would imagine construction, there's probably little, I think there's little pebbles and stuff like that. It's not quite, they haven't
They wouldn't be concerned about
the,
being as nice and fine.
Right, which is fine with the lavender. It doesn't care one way or the other. So however it's easier for you to get is probably going to be fine. But lots of sand is going to be your best bet.
All right, well, maybe I better put on my driving shoes instead of my gardening shoes. Go get me some sand, first of all.
There you go.
Great. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
All right,
mm-hmm.
thank
Bye-bye.
You for the call. We're at the midpoint already here of this part of Focus with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. And we invite you to call in with lawn and garden care questions. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Naperville is the next caller, and that's line four. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Well, that's not my original question, and she probably can't answer this without looking at it, but I have a blue spruce that is right on my lot line. And the on my side, and which would be the west side, the needles have it's losing its needles, so that
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's some branches that don't have any needles on it at all. And I don't know if there's a common problem with that you're aware of or not.
Well, is it just on? Is it just the old needles, or it's the old and new both, or?
Well, it started with the old needles, but it seems like it's losing it faster than it's growing out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So, and even on some of the branches, it's completely lost all their needles. So you know, so they're kind of dead looking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know, you don't have bagworms.
Well, no, I wouldn't know what they were, in all honesty.
Okay. Bagworms, you definitely, like this time of year, you'd see the bags. And they'd be hanging down like little Christmas ornaments, or little brownish-looking things. And they're pretty good size, you know, inch and a half, 2 inches long.
So
we can rule that out. That would be one thing that is really a problem on spruces. I'd also think about spider mites. They get a spruce spider mite that can cause some real problems. And usually you notice the needles sort of look off-cast. They're not quite the right color.
Right,
and
they're light green or something.
Yeah, sometimes they kind of go grayish, and then the needles will fall off, so I would wonder about spider mites. You can take a white piece of paper and then just shake the branches over the white piece of paper, and the little spider mites, you can see them running around on the white piece of paper.
Really?
So I would check for that. I'd also wonder about, they do get some disease problems, some needle disease problems, and certainly if it's been going on for a number of years, you might actually see death of the branches.
Yeah, it has been going on for years.
Right, so that could certainly also be some needle diseases. Are you here in Champaign-Urbana? I don't remember.
No, I'm north. I'm of DuPage County.
Okay, well, DuPage has a wonderful extension office. I would just, they have master gardeners as well as a horticulture educator like myself up there, and I would get a hold of them. It should be in your phone book under probably University of Illinois or under DuPage County.
No.
And I would contact them, bring in a sample, let them take a look at it and see if they can figure out what's going on.
Okay. For the spider mite, of course, what would you spray them with for spider mites if that were the problem?
Right. We don't have a whole lot of good miticides like we used to. You can use insecticidal soap on them, but sometimes with blue spruces, I will tell you, it will take some of the color off. It doesn't hurt the plant, but it kind of changes the color of them. But I'd find out for sure what it is first before you start doing any spraying, and certainly read the label. Don't spray when it's too windy or too hot, kind of thing. So,
okay.
Yeah, because we're getting into some warm temperatures here, so it wouldn't be a time I'd be thinking about spraying a lot of stuff.
Now, here's my question that I originally called for.
Mm-hmm.
I got this darn creeping ivy or creeping Jenny, people call it different things in my yard. And I have a whole bunch of evergreens. What can I safely use to spray my lawn that will not hurt, you know, because some stuff says do not spray on roots of, you know, of evergreens and stuff.
Right.
And so what can you safely spray your lawn with to kill that stuff?
Well, you're probably looking at one of the products that is more effective on things like Creeping Charlie and Creeping Jenny, whatever you want to call it. And it does have a certain product in it that is a concern if you use it over the roots of trees and shrubs. So you may find that you can't use Trimac is one of those particular products that often is used for Creeping Jenny, Creeping Charlie control. But it has three different herbicides in it. So you may find that you just can't use that product because of the number of trees you have. So you may have to go back to something like just 2,4-D, which is one of the dandelion type killers that we'd have out there. It's not quite as effective, but if you're again, read the label, use it according to label directions. When it says that you can reapply it, then I would reapply it. So one spray is not going to do it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Let's continue here. And the next person is in Paxton. That's line 3 right here. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Last year we planted 2 rhododendron plants, and one died. And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations on care for those.
Mm-hmm. Rhododendrons are one of those that if you get the site right and you site them at the right place and all that stuff, they do beautifully around here, but you have to do a lot of site preparation first. They like organic soils, so they like compost mixed in, peat moss, so they like a high organic matter soil. They like moist soil, but it needs to be well drained. So that's always the issue. We kind of did that fine line between those two things, because they don't like to sit in water, but they like moist soils. They like acidic soil. So you have to do something to change the acidity of the soil around here for us. We have to. So that's a matter of adding, usually it's a matter of adding sulfur. And then also, ideally, it'd be nice if you could do this like a year before you actually plant them, or at least the season before you plant them. We don't always do that, but that would be ideal. If you could sort of prepare the area, let the sulfur work, let the pH go down, make it more acidic, and then plant them when it's ready. Barring that, those kinds of things I would absolutely do before you plant them, and then watch them. Make sure that if they start to go yellow, you may want to go ahead and make sure that you add something like muriacid or one of the fertilizers for acid-loving plants, and then keep them fertilized that way so that they don't have that iron deficiency and go yellow, that kind of thing. So, and I would even plant rhododendrons and azaleas just up a little bit higher instead of doing just that, what we always normally say is, you know, put it right at the soil level. I'd actually plant them up an inch or so. So get that root ball up just a little bit and then put the soil, so they're kind of almost in a mound, if that makes sense. And then I would mulch them with wood chips or something like that.
Since we've already planted them.
So forget all I just said.
Is there anything? We did put a few wood chips around.
Right.
Last year we put a few too many and it was planted a little bit lower.
Yeah.
So the new one that we got to replace it, we did plant it up higher.
Mm-hmm.
And each time we've planted them, we've added peat moss to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
How can we, is there any way to still add sulfur to the area?
You can add sulfur, certainly try to work sulfur into the top part of the soil. That's not ideal, but you could. It's still worth it.
Okay.
And it's just a powder type product, comes in a bag. And then I would also definitely be thinking about fertilizing them with one of the acid-loving type fertilizers.
And how often would you do that?
I would certainly read the label. A lot of those you could even do once a week. It depends on if they're looking pretty good and looking green, you don't have to do it that often. But boy, when they start doing that yellow thing, then you got to pay attention and make sure that you do go ahead and fertilize them. And make sure they don't dry out too much, because they're not very forgiving when they dry out.
Okay.
So, be watering on a regular basis. And when it's like what it is today, maybe tomorrow, you might be watering them every single day.
Okay.
Okay, for the new ones.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any recommendations for Annabelle hydrangeas?
Mm-hmm.
Do you cut those back in the fall or in the winter, or do you just let them go and perform? Do you have any recommendations?
I would cut them back either in the fall or spring and then let them come back from there. They get kind of tall and lanky and kind of funny looking if you don't anyway.
So when they bloom on old wood or new wood?
They bloom on new wood.
Okay.
So they bloom on new wood. That way you can go ahead and prune them in the early part of the season or the very late part of the season, because you're not worried about taking off that old wood. A lot of the other hydrangeas bloom on old wood, so you can't necessarily do that with them.
Okay. So when you prune them, do you prune them back pretty severely?
Sure.
Or?
You certainly can.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For the call. We just keep going here. The next person in line is in Urbana, and this would be line number two. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I have a question about sycamore trees and lawns. We have two really beautiful giant sycamore trees in our front yard. Well, they're on the street. They're street trees. And we love them for the shade in the summer mm-hmm. and everything. But as you can imagine, our lawn underneath them is looking a bit patchy. And it's mm-hmm. just kind of, just over the years, it's getting a little balder and a little balder.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it, do sycamores actually change the pH of the soil, or is it just a matter of the fact that they have these ginormous leaves that drop everywhere and kind of, make a home for themselves?
Yeah. It really has more to do with the shade issue more than anything. And then depending on what other trees you have, it may end up being a fairly dry shade as well. So sometimes that's an issue. So it's really a shade problem. And it's even our shade-loving grasses need some sun.
Right.
I mean, none of them do well in deep shade. They just don't do well. So depending on what other trees you have around. So you kind of have to decide a couple of things. Obviously, these are street trees, so you have to go to your city arborist, but maybe there are some ways that these could be limbed up a little bit more, or at least maybe opened up, so maybe you can get some more light in. That may or may not be a possibility. And then from there, you might decide that you just really want to, there's lots of shade-loving plants. You may just decide that there's just no way I can have grass in some areas but not in others, or realize that you're going to have to reseed them every year and just realize the grass is not going to be long-term in those spots.
Right, right.
So
okay.
You kind of just decide. There may be certain areas where you just decide you really want grass because of traffic control or something along those lines. But then these other areas, there's wonderful plants, hostas and ferns and all kinds of wonderful
things.
Yeah,
we actually, we have quite a lot of, we have hostas a lot of places mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So it's sort of there's just a kind of one area where we have a bit of grass, and it's sort of a picture lawn, It's just
Sure.
kind of decorative lawn there.
Sure.
But are there any other kind of ground covers now? I remember hearing a few years ago about lots of research being done into alternatives to grass for, walkable ground covers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's been any progress in that area lately.
Yeah, there's actually a whole line of plants now that are out there for some traffic. Now, none of them take the traffic that grass does. I mean, that's one of the beauties of lawns is that they really will take a lot of abuse, I guess, for the most part. And some of these other ones will take some traffic. There's some very, very tiny sedums, but those aren't going to do real well in your spot because you don't get much sun.
Okay.
And so unfortunately, a lot of those kind of alternative things I'm not sure are going to work for you just because of the shade aspect to it. So I definitely, you know, you may find you just want to reseed every year with the shade-loving grass and then just realize that you're just going to have to keep doing that every year. So unfortunately. But there's other ground covers out there. There's Pachysandra and some of them that actually do quite well in shady spots.
Right, but if you want to be able to walk on it, then you
right.
have to...
Absolutely.
Okay,
so it gets
well,
it much
you
know, harder. I know,
grass,
I know.
Grass seed is cheap, so.
Yeah, and it may be just, you just decide to do that in those spots. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. All right, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and let's see, we'll continue here. And the next person in line will be Danville, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a white mulberry tree that's about 25 years old, and I enjoy it because it brings the birds in season. Mm-hmm. But for the last 3 or 4 years, I've noticed a lot of the green berries are dropping, which they are right now. Is mm-hmm. it just a phase, or is there something I can do to preclude some of that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It might be. I'm not terribly familiar with the mulberry part of it, but I'm just guessing because of other plants that do this kind of thing, is that sometimes when they produce a lot of fruit, some of it will just naturally drop off because they've produced a lot of it. So you may be seeing part of that. Sometimes when they go through a certain amount of stress, they'll drop their fruit early. So other than that, I'm not real sure. And so I don't think there's probably too much you can do about it. I have a feeling it probably has more to do with environmental conditions than anything.
I see. Well, it is in a extreme portion of the yard next to the curb, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And it's hard to fertilize.
Right.
And you think that if I... added some, well, I use the root feeders a lot mm-hmm. for the other trees, and I haven't for this. Maybe that in future years that would help toward...
Well, it certainly might help the growth of the tree, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to go ahead and drop the fruit. It's one of those things, as I said, if they're growing really well and all the flowers get pollinated to the point where it produces lots and lots of fruit, they just naturally won't hang on to all of it, and they'll just naturally drop some of it. So that's something that you really don't have a whole lot of control over, to be honest with you. So you certainly can probably help the health of the tree, but whether that's really going to help you too much when it comes to the fruit.
Well, it was severely pruned last February mm-hmm. For the first time in years, so perhaps that has something to do with it now.
Possible.
I appreciate your comment.
Thank you. And again, we'll go to another caller here. This is Bloomington, Illinois, and it's line 4. Toll-free line. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
See, I recently purchased some fertilizer thinking I could save a few dollars. I went to Lowe's and bought an off-brand rather than the name brand Scotts, and it burned in several places, and I think I learned a lesson. It was Stay Green, and both the regular fertilizer and the seed starter, they both burned. So I guess I learned a lesson there not to buy the off-brand. And I've never had Scotts burn ever, even if I occasionally, you know, put on too much. Is that typical? Is there different ingredients in the cheaper brands?
Well, you really have to look at the label, really, like anything. You have to look at the label. And sometimes what you'll see is with nitrogen, because that's really what we're looking for with the lawns, sometimes it's slow release. Or it's a combination of slow release and fast release. And the slow release, it's much harder to burn the lawn. I'm not sure with Scotts, there may be more of that going on there. So it's actually a slow release, so you don't have to worry about it. So I think the big thing is personally, I wouldn't worry too much about name brands when it comes to fertilizer, but I would worry about, or at least be concerned about, is looking at the label and just compare labels.
Well, you know, I did, and I even asked the clerk about the Stay Green. I said, will this burn? Because the label said, will not burn. And
so
did, does it say fast release or slow release? I don't see that on there.
It should say there, actually. It'll because a lot of times it'll say so much percent of it is fast release, so much of a percent is slow release. Or it may just say so much of a percent is slow release, and you assume the rest of it is fast release.
So you it doesn't matter the brand, just look for those items.
Okay. I would and I would see if it has what I want in it. And I think the other thing is, are you sure their applicator? There wasn't a problem with the applicator itself? Were you using like a drop spreader or something like that? Or?
Oh, the broadcast.
Mm-hmm. I'd wonder about that. Is there some issues there? Or what was the lawn fairly dry at the time when you were applying it? So I'd also wonder about just the application, if there was something else going on there.
Okay.
Particularly, you know, it got pretty hot there for a while and fairly dry, and then it got cold. So, you know, were there some issues along those lines of just in the amount, the application itself?
Okay. Okay.
So I'd look at that too. But
hey, another on the you had a previous caller on the shady. I have the same problem under an oak, and I have to reseed the grass every spring. And end of June, it seems to fade. I get good coverage initially. You know, it comes up about 80-90%. By the end of June, when it starts heating up, it withers down to about 40-50%. I always thought it was the shade seed mixture I was putting in, and so this year I changed and went to a couple of different varieties, and I've looked at, I see the red fescue and Chewing's fescue and bluegrass. Is annual ryegrass is something you don't want to put down, right?
Well, it's not a very quality lawn, for sure. It's a cheap. There might be some times where you'd want to use annual ryegrass, and it's simply because if you want a quick cover, say you've got a wedding up here, you know, suddenly you've got a spot in your lawn and you've got a wedding coming up or something, or you just moved into a brand new home and it's July and August and you really don't want to spend the money on really quality seed right now because you're concerned about, you know, getting it watered, but you want something out there. Well, you use annual ryegrass. So it's a very temporary type of grass. Even though it says it's annual, it isn't even always annual. So it definitely, there might be some uses there, but I definitely would not consider it a long-term quality grass for a lawn.
So if at the end of June the grass is dying out, it comes up okay, but then it dies out in June, is that a shade issue or is that the...
Is it a water? I mean, do you water it normally?
Yeah, no matter how much I water, it still thins out.
It certainly could be part of, again, the whole shade thing going on there. Because, as I said, they just don't do well in really shady spots. So you may decide that there's certain spots where grass is just not going to grow well.
But you said to the previous caller, reseed. So it'll initially take, but because of the shade, it eventually dies.
In some spots, that may be an issue. I guess I was thinking it was probably more of a dry issue than anything, but because often those two go together. We get shade, and then it gets very dry as well.
Is there certain seeds, like fescue, it says here, creeping red fescue. Mm-hmm. Are there certain varieties that do better in shade?
Well, those are just what you just mentioned. Those are type of grasses that normally would do better in shadier environments. And as you said, maybe there's other grasses that you want to go for that might do better for you. Those would typically be the ones that we might think of. But there are some Kentucky bluegrass cultivars that do better in shade, Eclipse, and you know they all have different names to indicate that there's some shade tolerance there. But again, it's a tolerance thing. It doesn't mean they like it there. It just means they tolerate it.
Hey, on fruit trees, when can you trim them? When can you cut them?
Normally, we do that in February and March.
Oh, before they...
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We have probably 5, 6, 7 minutes left in this part of Focus. If you'd like to talk with Sandy, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Anything in the way of events coming up that you'd like to mention?
Well, I did want to mention the Champaign County Master Gardeners are having their garden walk again this year. We're trying something a little bit different. You know, you like to do different things. So it's not going to be on Father's Day this year. It's actually going to be Saturday, June 25th. So it's not even on a Sunday. So we're going for a Saturday, June 25th. It runs from 10 to 5, and a bunch of great gardens doing something, again, a little bit different. We actually have some gardens that are out in the country. So we're doing a town and country garden walk.
Sounds nice.
You get to see some very large gardens as well as some city-type gardens. So I think people will enjoy that. So that's the Champaign County Master Gardeners Garden Walk on Saturday, June 25th. They can give us a call at 217-333-7672. And then you can also, at most of the garden centers in the area, you can get tickets there as well.
Okay. Good. Let's talk with somebody else here. We have someone listening in Charleston. That's next line here, number 4. Hello.
Hey, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I've got part of my lawn, so it's got quite a bit of shade in it, and a very thin grass growth now, a lot of broadleaf weeds. What I'm most, or the question I've got, though, is I know you've got broadcast cedars and drop spreaders and slit cedars that you can rent. Are those basically the same, or one better, one worse? Some conditions that suggest you should use one rather than the other. My inclination was to use the more difficult but more effective slit cedar approach to it. But what would you suggest?
I think the slit cedars work especially well if you have an existing lawn. As in, you've got some grass out there, but you really feel like you need to thicken it up, or you're trying to add some diversity to the lawn by adding different types of grass seed or something along those lines. And it's very difficult to just broadcast seed over an existing lawn and expect it to really get down in there and get good seed-to-soil contact. It's just kind of hard to do. So I think that's where the slits, the eaters, come in. But you're right. It's a little bit more difficult, or especially if you're renting them, you're not used to using them, realize that it's kind of a workout. So you kind of have to keep that in mind, but it certainly would be more effective in an existing lawn. If you have a brand new lawn, you may find that you can just use the broadcast spreaders and those work out just fine for you. So it kind of depends on that.
Sort of a follow-up to that. Once you use that, do you recommend also an immediate application of some fertilizer and watering after that?
Well, I would just go with whatever your regular fertilizer program is for your existing lawn. Normally, this would be the time of year that we would, 1st of May is when we would normally recommend that you do your first fertilization application. I probably wouldn't necessarily do the two at the same time. It depends on how much seed you're putting out there. If you're not really putting out a whole lot of seed, I'd probably just stay with my regular program. If you're putting a lot of seed out there, I would wait until I've mowed it at least twice before I think about fertilizing it.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. It's really, and I don't want to be making any personal commentaries on anybody who's called in, but we get these questions all the time about people saying, I'm trying to get grass to grow in the shade. Yeah. And grass is just not a shade plant.
It's not. Go to a forest.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't see a lot of grass.
You know, grass is an open kind of thing. It really likes the sun. And we always make the suggestion, well, there's all kinds of things that you can grow that grows in the shade. Shade-loving ground covers. There are lots of different things you can do with shade gardening. But I guess that's really, maybe if you've never done that before, it just seems foreign to you. Right. The idea of the lawn is more, it's a more established kind of idea. Right. And maybe you think, well, maybe if I just got the right kind of grass, it would grow. And maybe the thing is that the conditions are just not right, and it doesn't matter what kind of grass.
Right.
It's just not going to grow because it doesn't get enough sun.
Right. And absolutely. And, you know, there are times when we do want, we were talking about that, is just that sometimes you want a lawn just because of traffic. You know, a lot of, you know, it's tough to walk through a patch of hosta, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's when you have to think about, are there some paths? Maybe it's time to actually do some hard surfaces in certain areas and then put some hostas or stuff around those, because we all have those certain paths that we always take. Start thinking about stepping stones, maybe even thinking about a sidewalk or something for those areas if it's really a traffic issue, and then go from there. But you're right. I mean, I talk to so many people who are just really fighting the whole shade thing, when I think people should just embrace the shade. Embrace it. Don't fight it. Just go for it.
Well, it is, I guess, something that you have to educate yourself a little bit to know what's going to do well, and then how to put those things together. And it's really, I was just at a friend's house over the weekend, and she has quite a small backyard, and it's enclosed, and it's very shaded. And she has a beautiful shade garden there and a lot of variety of plants. And I know that in the terrible heat of summer, that's a great place to be, sitting there.
Right.
Because everything is green and cool,
sure,
and it's well shaded, and You know, I couldn't hardly think of a better place to
be. I envy people with a lot of shade. I know people think nuts, but because I don't have a lot of shade at this point, but I'm getting there. So I'm really excited when I finally get a little spot with her shade.
Yeah, okay. Anything else real quick that you might like to mention in general? We talked about the Master Gardeners event coming up. That's a little while from now.
Yeah. We also have Raymond Cloyd, the U of I Extension Specialist, is going to be out at the Idea Garden on May 28th. The Idea Garden is there on South Lincoln, just south of the corner of Florida and Lincoln Urbana, part of the U of I Arboretum. The last Saturday of every month, we have programs. Raymond's on Illinois Gardener, WIL Illinois Gardener, many times. He's going to be doing a program on how to effectively deal with insects and mites in the garden. So at 11 o'clock, May 28th, just go out to the Idea Garden and see what's going on out there. It's also just a great place to see. And, you know, the Master Gardeners are really good at, you know, labeling things and giving you some ideas on what you can do in your own backyard.
Yeah, I haven't been there in a while. I think the last time I was there, there wasn't much going on yet. It was still
fairly new.
It was, I don't know if it was late winter or early spring, but there wasn't much happening right there at the moment.
And they change it every year. I think that's the fun part. So even if you were there last year, I guarantee it's not going to look the same this year.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she is here in the 10 o'clock hour. We talk about lawn and garden care. By the way, if you're interested in gardening, she did mention the program Illinois Gardener. That's a show that you can see on our companion station WILL-TV. It's now, when is it now?
Thursday nights at 7. I think you quiz me. I think you just do that on purpose just to see if I remember.
Well, you've been on the show. You ought to remember. Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Diane Nolan is the host, and it's a good show. It's a good resource, and they have rotating groups of people like Sandy, mm-hmm. people who work in some of the various garden centers, people who are from the University of Illinois, who come in and answer questions. So there's another opportunity, as on this program, you can call in and ask questions about the plants, and then usually they have some features in there and good information for you if you like to work outside in the garden and grow things. So Thursday nights, 7 o'clock, Illinois Gardener, and the next month Sandy will be back here and we'll be doing it again.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Thank you. Programming here on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Programming is also made possible by Active Seniors Options, presenting the Senior Expo Flair 2005 Passport to Active Living, to be held Friday, May 20th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Interstate Center in Bloomington. Expo Flair 2005 will feature entertainment and activities for seniors and their families, including wellness screenings, seminars, informative exhibits and drawings, and more information is available at their website, which is www.expoflare.com. A little later today, as part of the Afternoon Magazine, a recent poll found that 75% of parents want to change something about their children's sleep habits. An expert on pediatric sleep will be joining us for the Afternoon Magazine today. She'll be taking your questions and offer advice to help infants, toddlers, and their parents get a good night's sleep. She is a psychologist. Her name is Jody Mendel, and she's an associate director of the Sleep Disorder Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She'll be the guest in the 1 o'clock hour of the show. Celeste Quinn is the host. The program gets underway at noon here on AM 580. In the next hour of this show, we'll be talking about movies. Our guest, David Desser. He's director of the Unit for Cinema Studies at the U of I. So I hope you'll stick around. We'll have news at 1 minute past the hour. First, an update on the markets.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning.